Now, this basic outline of the story of the Buddha is pretty familiar to all of us. In fact, it's so familiar, I think, that we can really take it for granted. But the question we should ask ourselves when we start our study of this tradition is, why would a prince, successful young man, all the pleasures of life available to him, really in the prime of his life, young child, beautiful family, why would he choose to leave his palace in the prime of his life and take up the harsh, difficult, and demanding life of an ascetic? What was he looking for? What was he seeking? And what did it mean to say that he had awakened to the truth? What does this metaphor mean in that kind of a setting? To understand the Buddhist answers to these questions, we need to know something, really, about Siddhartha Gautama's religious background and the religious world of India in the 6th and 5th centuries before the Common Era. Now, to unpack the religious history of India, we turn first to a body of texts known as the Vedas. These are the most authoritative texts in the Hindu tradition and the oldest surviving religious texts in India. The earliest hymns in the Vedas can be dated to about 1500 to 1000 years BCE. They are some of the oldest religious literature in the world. According to the Hindu tradition, the Vedic hymns were heard by sages known as rishis, and then passed on through an unbroken chain of oral tradition down to the present day. This is still done today in India and was done even more extensively in previous generations, as Brahmin priests would take their boys, young boys aside, and lead them through the rote recitation of the hymns of the Vedas. There are some films around available in our world that show what this process looks like, and it's really quite remarkable. It's a reminder, actually, that the capacities for memory of young children can be quite extraordinary. These young men would start memorizing the texts of the Vedas as early as 5 years old, but of course, even when they were younger than that, they'd be hanging around when they're older brothers would be memorizing and chanting the texts and would already have many of the texts passively recorded in their memory. So they were capable of remembering and passing on through an unbroken chain of oral tradition hymns that go back perhaps 3,500 years. It's really a remarkable oral tradition and oral transmission of religious material. These hymns were composed or heard, if that's the correct verb to use, in an early form of the Sanskrit language. This is a language that is closely related to Latin and Greek and to many of the languages of Europe. We'll use a certain amount of Sanskrit, of course, in our own study of Buddhism, because classical Indian Buddhism was discussed and developed often in the Sanskrit language. It may seem quite unfamiliar to you. That is perfectly acceptable if that turns out to be the case. But you might be comforted to know that it's related to English and to the other and to other European languages, not to all, but to most modern European languages. The people who spoke Sanskrit, for example, called themselves the Arya, A-R-Y-A, the Arya. This word in classical Sanskrit means simply a noble person, but it's found in the names of two countries in the modern world. You might ask yourselves whether you can think of them before I say them. One is the country Iran, one of the traditional countries of the Arya, of the Aryans. And the other, this is really surprising. In fact, it's so surprising to many of my students that they tell me I must be crazy if I think this is true. The other one is Ireland, that great land of the Arya that lies out there on the western edge of the continent of Europe, just on the edge of the North Atlantic. Much of European civilization, like the civilization of India, is derived from the traditions of these ancient people who migrated out of Central Asia in the middle of the second millennium before the Common Era and settled as far west as Ireland and as far south as India.